I'm Dan Orlovsky. When I'm looking for safety, I always take the extra steps and listen to Chris and Case on the Detroit Lions podcast.
Hey, Dean Blandino here, and I can tell you unequivocally that call was 100% wrong.
Lions with it, second and goal from the 8, down 6, but on the move. Chris, working from the gun, looks out to the right, now checks out that Viking defense. Takes the snap, back to pass, looks right, got Case in the end zone, touchdown Detroit Lions! That's it, packs the bag, starts the plane, this game is over! How big is that?
And now it's time to start the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions fans, it's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast, your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, the guys people are talking about when they discuss monkeys and footballs. Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast. This is episode 138. This is the official Detroit Lions podcast for Reddit. It's the most plagiarized show in Detroit. I am your dashing host, Chris. And with me is my good friend and co-host, Dan. How are you doing, my man?
I am fantastic, Chris. How are you, bud?
Oh, man, it's all going great. Great to have you on the show today. We really love having you on to help co-host in Case's stead.
I'm definitely going to be better than him, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right, we got a big show today. We're going to break down the Lions' loss to the Bengals. We're going to talk about our top coaching candidates. We're also going to pick the winner of our Stafford So Tough contest. Dan is going to pick the final winner, so stay tuned for that. He's also going to take you around the division and a whole lot more. We got a great show lined up today. You ready to go, Dan?
I was born ready, bud.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, time for a couple of quick announcements. First, don't forget, we've got the last post-game show of the season. After the Packers game, we'll do a live show. New Year's Eve, you can get your drink on. We'll do the typical BAC check before we take your calls. So be ready. And we'll talk about the Lions season. We'll do a season in review, and we'll talk about that game. It's a first chance to sweep the Packers since 1991, so it's definitely worth watching. Make sure to help us out and check us out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from Michael, Matt, Eric, Joel, Asshole Joel the Muff Muncher, the other one's not, Nick, Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Benjamin, Justin, John, Ross, Matthew, Morgan, Peter, Randy, Matt G, Kalen, Scott, Greg, Lucas, David, Richard, Bryce, Chuck Nasty, Fight Me Case, Mike K, Floundericious, Ryan, Zach, Gina, Miak, Malcolm, Dan, Gary, Peter, Von, Penda, Skyler, Mario, Lucas, Tim, Nicholas, Jesse, Pilo, and of course, our very first donor, Mathis. We also want to call out our newest patrons, WingsFan1, Jason, Ryan, Cameron, Paul, Taylor, Adam, Ken F, and we got some big ups from Dalaxy and Brian B. We never forget Brian V from I Prevail. Check him out, iprevailband.com. He and I are going to write some great Lion songs here. It's great stuff coming, so don't forget about all that stuff. If you'd like to join the Patreon crew, patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast, or just go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that Patreon link. As little as a dollar a month gets you access to the extra bonus content that we're putting together in addition to the regular show. Don't forget to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and on the Tweetermaker. On Twitter at DETLionsPodcast, DETLionsPodcast, it's the best place to see Dan.
With no pants on, because this is a pants-free podcasting baby.
That's right. Rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. Give us those 5-star reviews. We love you, everybody who's been doing that. Thank you so much. Also, give us a call via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us on the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Leave us a message and get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And boy, do we have heartbreaker. This was it. Everything was lined up for us, Dan, and it feels like the team just let it go. This loss to the Bengals was hard on a lot of fans. There's been a lot of unhappiness on the Twitter sphere and Reddit, everywhere you look. What did you see out there? What did you see from this team on Christmas Eve, Dan?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I mean, when you look at the way the last 2 weeks of the schedule had shaped up and you go, okay, the Lions got to go to Cincinnati and play a team that's beat up and Marvin Lewis is gone and they're not playing well. They don't have much to play for. And then you look at the comp of Atlanta's got to go play New Orleans and Carolina, and that's the team you really need to lose. At least going into the second to last game of the year, you're feeling really good about yourselves, right? Like, all right, we're going to go to Cincinnati, chalk it up. Then you get the news of Rodgers not playing last game of the year, and you're feeling really good, right? Mm-hmm. I told my friends, I was as surprised at the result of that game as I had been in a long time. I had taken it to the bank that they would go win that game because it meant so much. It was really going to put them in a great situation the following week to go get a win and see what happened in it with Atlanta. And just watching the game, I didn't get the chance to watch the whole game live because we don't get it here and I don't have DirecTV, but I kept checking Twitter and kept checking Red Zone channel. And, you know, the game was close and I was waiting for the game to go from, you know, whatever it was, 16-13, then go, I was waiting for it to go from 20-16 and then 23-16 and okay, 26. I was just waiting for them to run away with it and make that, you know, get that score to get to be a two possession game. And it just never happened. And I remember checking the game and turning to my wife and going, the Lions are going to lose. And I was surprised. They just didn't play well. They didn't look like a team playing that had something to play for. They didn't look like a team that was desperate or urgent or they were conscious of it. You know, I've been in those locker rooms. You're conscious of it. It didn't seem like they played with the urgency that showed they were aware of it in a way, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about coaching in a little bit because the universe is seems to be lined up against Jim Caldwell right now. And I don't want to go into that, but the place that everyone goes on these types of things is that's coaching. It's happened so many times. They've come out in the first quarter. This game, they seem flat for a good majority of the game. Is, in your experience, is this a coaching thing or is there something, what else could be at play that causes a team to come out with this kind of never too high, never too low kind of attitude? Maybe that's not the right word I'm looking for, but you know, they came
mindset,
out.
Mindset. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I think there's a lot of ways you could look at it. So listen, there's a benefit for your head coach never blinking. There's a benefit for your head coach not showing a ton of emotion because then you take that on as your team yourself. And I was on the team last year that had all those crazy fourth quarter comebacks and everyone was praising, man, he never blinks. And so neither does his team. And they always keep an even keel. I was on that team. And so, you know, when it's working or when you're winning, it's seen as a benefit. And then when you're losing, it's seen as a detriment. I've been on teams that had coaches that had as much rah-rah as you could imagine. I mean, incredible Saturday night speeches. And before the game would, you know, I thought the guy was going to pass out. He was so passionate talking to us. That doesn't necessarily mean a lot during the game. Because here's the reality. If you're a Saturday night meeting, team meeting, you're a Saturday night, and you give a great team meeting Saturday night, there's bits and pieces you can take of it. But there's still, I mean, if you do it at 9 o'clock at night, there's still 15 hours till kickoff if you have a 1 o'clock game. That stuff wears off. Even if you give a great locker room speech of a 1 o'clock kickoff at 12:40, by the time the game actually gets going, it's another half an hour. So eventually that stuff wears off and you just have to go play good football. Here's my thing. I don't see Bill Belichick is this incredibly fiery guy that's given amazing speeches that are riveting and, oh man, I'm just going to go play so much better because of that.
Yeah, you're right.
So, and I, like I said, I've been on teams and I've seen teams that have these head coaches that, whoa, those have got to be amazing speeches and, or, you know, win one for the Gipper type things. And they don't, the reality is you've got to prepare well and you've got to play well. And there's a lot of variables that make that happen. I just, there's still, after watching games, and it was, there's still a talent deficiency. There still is some issues talent-wise on the team that no matter how excited you are to play, there's going to be over 3 hours, it's going to show itself.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you, I want to go, there's two things. I want to talk about the talent, and I want to go to the offensive line, but I have a question first that a lot of people have talked about, and your experience may be really helpful with. You know, and especially last year with the big comeback thing and all the comeback memes that went with it, people talked about, I didn't hear a lot of people praising Coach Caldwell for being steady in face of the storm. What I heard was they just turned the playbook over to Matthew Stafford and let him call the plays and run the offense. How much is that? How much control did Stafford have during those comebacks? In the last 2 minutes, when they're on the field and they're rushing through these plays and doing the hurry up and so on, how much of that is Matthew Stafford? How much of that is Jim Bob Cooter calling plays or giving options? What's happening there? What's the kind of gestalt of all this?
I mean, there's a little bit of both of them being in control. I would tell you that more often than not, it's a Jim Bob call than a Matthew call. Now, Matthew has some ability to do some stuff at the line of scrimmage, but you're talking about some of those were on the road when you're short of time. Communicating isn't the easiest thing in the noise, and you have to do it in 3 seconds. So now, listen, no one in the NFL, no quarterback in the NFL is going up to line of scrimmage calling his own plays all the time. Mm-hmm. Nobody. It's why would you pay an offensive coordinator over $1 million? It doesn't happen. Now guys go to the line of scrimmage with packages or certain plays, and then you might be in a 2 minute drill and call a player here or there, but there's still not a lot of guys in the NFL who call plays at the line of scrimmage in the 2 minute drill. You're always getting a play from your coach because your coach is three to 5 seconds ahead of you, you know? So I think, listen, people make, there's too big a deal of, oh, well, they just handed the playbook over to Matthew. I have never experienced that where it's just like, okay, Matthew, you just go do what you want to do. It was always a collaborative effort, a group effort. Jim Bob might give Matthew a call and Matthew might override him because of timing. He had already communicated a play and it wasn't worth the 6 to 8 seconds it was going to take to communicate a new play, or he liked the play that was called, but it was still very much so Jim Gobb calling plays and Matthew going executing them.
Yep. Okay. That's a great take. And that clarifies a lot of things, I'm sure, for people who think that the only reason those comebacks are happening were simply because of Matthew. Now we need to be clear. Matthew is a very talented young man who can deliver a ball incredibly well. And watching him in those comebacks has been amazing. But we started the conversation a little bit about that sense of urgency, that mindset that you have. I feel like, and I talk sometimes about Mad Stafford, you know, he takes a hit and you can tell suddenly a switch flips and you get this fire in his eyes and he just starts, you know, taking over and just owning the defense. You see that. For me, watching on TV, even in the Bucks game on the sideline, I was the second row behind the Lions bench, and you could see the changes and the reactions in between drives. You could just see it flick on where it hits, and he's like, I'm there. I'm just going to own this. And it's not something you can control, but Mad Stafford is best Stafford. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I'm a little bit more active on social media now than I used to be. And I try not to get in arguments on Twitter with people because there's no end game to it.
Right.
But I can appreciate how much people love sports. I truly do, because I love it as much as anybody. But it's hard for me to sit back when people go like, well, Matthew's not that good, or, you know, like, oh, he's never won anything. And I just close my eyes and to take a deep breath, because I want people to understand that the city and the organization are so fortunate to have him. He's literally one of 10 people like him in the world. And so when you have a quarterback that it playing means so much to him, that when he gets hit, he gets better, is such a rare quality. You hear all the time when games are going on and people are watching TV and you hear announcers or commentators go, well, the rush is getting to this guy, or he's starting to look down at the rush, where Matthew goes the 180 of that and almost invites it, because deep down to his core, he's got a lot of qualities, just a football player, right? He's just a football player. And so those things that happen get, you bring the best out of him in a way. I always feel like he's at his best more often than not, but those moments that, you know, bring him back to being 8 years old in the backyard and that football player mentality, that's not a common trait for quarterbacks. And I wish people took a step back and appreciated that aspect of it more and more and more.
And that way he reminds me so much of Brett Favre. That same kind of fire, that kind of fun with the game, and the kind of that throwback to that mentality of, you know, when you're in the backyard and you're thinking, you know, 3 seconds left, I got the ball, right? And like he did in the Dallas game, he lived that moment when he quick snapped, sure, and set a clock on the ball and pushed the ball over the line. That kind of thing. I really see that same kind of fire between him and Brett Favre. And they love the game. Let's talk a little bit more about him. There's some stuff going on. There's some conversations about whether Matthew should play or will he play. Should we put Rudock out there and see what he has against the Packers? And there's two things I want to bring up to you here quick before we dive into that. First, Jenna Lane on ESPN, she put out a question. Bucks defensive tackle Gerald McCoy was asked why he's continued playing in quote-unquote meaningless games despite having what's been reported as a partially torn bicep. And he says, "That's a loser's mindset, man. That's a terrible mindset to have." There's that word mindset again. And then the Lions Twitter just tweeted out a picture of Matthew, and he had a quote with, "I'm the quarterback here. This is what I work hard for. I work hard for opportunities to go out there and play on Sundays." I mean, those two things tied together. They've been out as we record in the last hour. They were both tweeted. That really kind of cuts to that question, should Matthew play? I think there's no question that Matthew should go out there and play, and I think there's no question that he wants to be out there playing.
Yeah, I mean, so to go to the first part of that, when Jenna Lane writes, you know, why do you, Gerald, continue to play in meaningless games? Okay, so first of all, there's no such thing as meaningless games because the NFL is literally week to week, as you can tell by everything that goes on in the NFL and the media. And last week, Nick Foles was the greatest thing in the world in Philadelphia, and now everyone wants him gone. So it's a week to week business. So there is no such thing as meaningless. Two, how would the fans react if a player came out and said, "I'm not going to play meaningless games," right? Because then you're having paying fans go, "Wait, why? Well, I'm not going to pay money for me. If this guy thinks it's meaningless, well, I'm not going to pay money for it." So there, to NFL players, there is no such thing as a meaningless game. It just, our resume happens 16 times a year. It's a resume every single week. And there's not 500 companies that get to look at your resume and you've got a bunch of options. There's 31 other. And if you don't have a good resume every single week, you're gone and you don't last. And there's a small window to have your resume. And every coach in the NFL wants consistency. They want consistency. That's the greatest strength a player can have, is availability and consistency. So that's the first thing. There's no such thing as meaningless games. Two, guys don't make it in the NFL and become, you know, Pro Bowlers, all pro players, big time contract players, cornerstones of their franchise because they just are talented or they caught a couple breaks. I mean, these guys are the cream of the crop, the elite of the elite. And you don't get there by doing 25% of the work or 80%. You get there by you're all out all the time, 100%. I'm giving everything I got. Now there's variations of guys that will do that and commit to that over time. And that's how you'll get great players and good players and guys that should be better than they are type things. Mm-hmm. But these guys, you don't make it in the NFL with there's no such thing as taking a day off or a meaningless thing to those guys. So, and then do I think Matthew should, I mean, I don't even have to repeat the question. I know the guy. Listen, if there's a game Sunday and it's at Novi High School and he's got a chance to go out and compete against someone, he's going to show up. I mean, that's just how he's wired. That goes back to my comment previous to this was, I mean, when I read that comment, when he says, "Listen, I work hard for the opportunity to go play," I'd be all in. If I'm a fan, I'm all in. I don't care what else happens, because if it means that much to you, it means that much to me, because we're on the same page then. We've got a chance. We've got a chance to go be good. And so, yeah, he's going to play. He's going to go try and win the game. He's going to go try throw for a gajillion yards. And, you know, he's super competitive. So there's no question about it. It's not even – it's 100% he's going to play.
You know, you really hit on it. You and I, you've got my heart and soul. Novi High School, my alma mater, where I went with Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And funny side story, he and I had a bet when we were in high school who would go further in broadcasting because we were both on the high school radio station. I've obviously won that bet. But
No doubt.
All right. No, that's great insight. I want to go back, though. You talked a little bit about the team on the game, and you said a little bit about the there's needs on the talent piece. And there's two pieces to this that I really at least my head's at. One of the things is Bob Quinn, in the time that he's been here, has done more to add depth to this roster than we've seen in the 10 years prior. We would add stellar talent across, you know, throughout the draft and free agency, but there was never seemed to be anybody behind him, except at quarterback, of course, but there never seemed to be anybody behind him that could back up if somebody got hurt. We see depth now, and the injuries that are inevitable to a team throughout the NFL season. The Lions are competitive, and we're in the playoff hunt until the second to last game of the season, despite just a ton of injuries this year. But I want to go strictly to the offensive line first, because we had 8, 9, 10 iterations of an offensive line in 15 games so far as a result of injuries, just that nonstop. And we'd spent a lot of money to upgrade on the line this year. How much do you think is a talent issue on the O-line, and how much of it is just a result of injury and unfamiliarity, no consistency of having the same guys on the line every week?
Well, it's twofold. I mean, so if you look at the usually in the NFL, the teams that are going to make the playoffs catch breaks health-wise. That's just – there's not that much of a disparity talent-wise, 1 through 32. So if you look at – I bet you if you looked at Carolina's offensive line and New Orleans' offensive line and Philly's offensive line – for the most part, those places have stayed healthy in the NFC, at least. You know, Atlanta's offensive line, those places have stayed healthy. I know Philly lost Peters, but they've been consistently healthy. Those guys have played together a long time, and that's huge. They've played 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games together for the most part, and all five of their starters or four of their starters have had a big chunk of playing time. So that's a big deal. So I think it's a little bit of talent and then injury, because – if you have a talented 3, 4, 5 guys, but one of those guys goes down, so then his backup is less talented than him. And usually that means you've got to move one guy from this position where he's pretty good at it and move him to another position where he may not be as efficient or as good at. And so an injury can have double impact. Two injuries could have triple impact because of the roster limitation, the moving parts that you have to go through. So I think losing Decker for half the season was a bigger deal than was made out to be. I mean, I'm never going to be a basher, but the guy who was playing in his place is no longer on the team. I mean, that should say enough.
He's not on any team either. Right.
That should say enough. Yeah. So, you know, that was a bigger loss. And then obviously, you know, it takes him time to get playing to the level that he's capable of playing. And then they've been injury riddled, and there's been multiple injuries. So again, those multiple injuries, those two injuries don't affect just two places. They affect three or four places there. And it's you can't make the excuse. It is what it is. Everyone's dealing with injuries, but there's also reality to it when you go, well, geez, we didn't even have our best punch. You know, we weren't able to throw our best punch because our right tackle who we signed was a really good player and big free agency signing missed a bunch of games because of injury. And so our center that we're hoping to make this young center take this big jump this year has missed some games. So then this left guard that we have, Graham Glasgow, has got to go play center. And then, okay, who's going to go play guard? Well, the guy that was going to play right tackle has got to go play guard. And then, wait, our right tackle is down again. Okay, he's going to go. You know, it's just this revolving door. And it's just hard to mask
when that unit's affected, it's hard to mask some of the other issues that you may have.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that makes great sense. Let's look just a little bit on the defensive side of the ball. Seems like the front seven has been a sore spot for the team this year from a talent perspective. The secondary has been great. They got dinged up at the end here. We saw some of the results of that. Some of the guys that couldn't play, saw that in Cincinnati. Front seven. I'm a huge fan of A'shaun Robinson. I think this guy has a huge future ahead of him. I think the same for Jared Davis. I think the problems that we're seeing in the line, though, Ziggy, while having, I think he's 8 sacks on the year, he didn't have a Ziggy kind of year. He was injured most of the year. A'shaun being the big guy left after Haloti went down, it allowed him to double on him and key on him. And then the talent level, I don't think, is as high as we'd want it for our other tackles and ends to kind of give us the pressure we wanted. We seem to lack pressure throughout the year. And so some people are down on A'shaun this year, but I just think that he was easy to key on based on the people surrounding him, and they kind of were able to handle him. Early in the year, we saw a ton of batted passes as a result of him being able to be him. But as soon as Haloti was gone, it seemed like that went away. The other piece is Jared Davis. A lot of people are down on him early. The kid's a rookie, right? I mean, he's running likely one of the more difficult positions on the defense. And as a rookie, I think he did a commendable job this year. He's still got a lot to learn. I see him spending this offseason with an NFL training regimen, a nutrition regimen, and the studying. He seems like a real, real hard film guy, real big study kind of guy. I think he's a guy that will really blow up next year for us. But what do you see? I mean, what's the kind of current state of the defensive front seven? And what do you see going forward for maybe what Bob Quinn would look to do with them leading into next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's holes for sure. You've got I'll talk about the whole defense. You've got Slay, who I love Slay. I think that Nevin's got some qualities that are redeemable that you like. I don't know a ton of the Tabor kid. I think he started to play a little bit more in the past couple of weeks,
yep.
And which was probably the right choice. Again, that's one of the harder positions to go play. GQ playing at a high level. I think Quandre is going to be a permanent safety. He'll be a Pro Bowler he's going to play for 10 years just because he's so good at football. So Haloti is the linchpin, because you mentioned that A'shaun was affected from Haloti getting out. Well, then Ziggy gets affected from Haloti being knocked out. Jared Davis gets affected from Haloti being knocked out. So Haloti's this guy that if an offense runs 70 plays a game and 30 of them are runs, Haloti's going to take up two other humans on the front at least half of those snaps. Mm-hmm. So that means that A'shaun's one-on-one for those half of the snaps. Ziggy's one-on-one, and Jared Davis may be one-on-none. And so when you lose that space-eating, strong, displacing the line of scrimmage body, it affects everybody around you. So Jared Davis isn't as good as he probably is going to be, because he's not this linebacker. At least he hasn't shown it right now. That's you want to get hands on. He's not this big. He's a runaround guy. He's an athlete that wants to find the ball, figure out the play, and shoot his guns and go get the ball. Well, he can't do that if he's got hands on him all the time, because there's no one commanding double teams up front. So that's why when, like, you know, I go back to like a Patrick Willis, who had a Justin Smith in front of him, or a Ray Lewis, who had I forget the D tackle's name in Baltimore. I'm trying to think. I forget his name, but they had these big D tackles that, you know, if you think of Darryl Smith in Jacksonville, when he had like a John Henderson in front of him, these D tackles take up bodies, and that's what allows these linebackers to run and go get these tackles. Keekly has the kid from Purdue and Star Latulé. You know, these backers have these guys in front of them. So, you know, I do like A'shaun. I think A'shaun's a really good run defender. I think that they can definitely use an impactful interior D lineman that, again, it's hard to find those guys that you can go, okay, they could play the run and they could play the pass, you know? So it's hard. Those guys don't, you know, come out of nowhere. So, but if they can find a D tackle that, you know, is able to push the pocket in the pass game, I think that's a benefit. You know, they've got to make a decision on Ziggy. I think Ziggy's a really good football player. Guys like Ziggy, they're not walking around, you know, Birmingham, just hanging out.
Role.
Yeah, you know, but I think Kerry Hyder being out was a big loss because Kerry had, you know, shown the ability to go get the quarterback. So you've got to find someone opposite. If Ziggy's back, you got to get edge guys, obviously, that can go run, you get to the quarterback, because then it makes everybody around you better. You know, that's I'm from first-hand experience. When you play a D-line that's good, that only has to rush four and they can get home, it's a totally different experience. They've got holes, but Bob's shown, you know, the ability to draft well.
Yeah, he really has. I'm impressed with it's in, you know, maybe it's just because the prior regime has conditioned me only to expect a couple players to play out of a draft or to be around after two or three seasons. But sure. We're seeing, what is it, almost all but two players playing in the regular rotation that we picked up in the draft this year. That's pretty solid hits from Mr. Quinn. I'm really impressed. I'm on the Bob Quinn fan train, and you know, I've not seen, he's got a pretty good body of work so far. I've not seen anything that's going to make me second guess him. And even, you know, early on, I didn't second guess him, and I was like, well, he's going to make a mistake, and he's got to get kind of in the fan view. He's got to get this kind of body of work behind him before you can kind of like, okay, I'm not going to second guess, you know, this decision. Right. But he's got such good moves, and the way he tweaks the bottom of the roster all the time. This is new to Detroit. This is new to this club, and I love what he's doing. I just haven't seen anything out of him that makes me say, ah, this guy, I don't trust Bob. I think trust in Bob is really the name of the game for Lions fans going forward here.
Yeah, I only had 1 year with him, and I didn't have a ton of interaction with him, but knowing where he came from, knowing how and the conversations I was able to have with him, I think he's got a really good, bright future as a general manager. I think Detroit is in a good place with him, and he's just got to continue to build and hit on some of his picks.
Yeah. I want to do one more thing, and this is, I know this can be really touchy, but you've not been a guy to shy away from questions. I disagree with his mindset 100%, but I've heard a lot of fans, and they're typically, you know, somebody's uncle, he's 55, 60 years old. He's, you know, watched the Lions lose their whole life. He's very, very down, distraught, broken. He has no faith that the Lions are ever going to do well, but he'll be right there celebrating when they do. And I don't blame him, right? He's been heartbroken a number of times, but he's the guy that says this team will never win with the Fords as owners. And I hear that and I say, there is no evidence to support the fact, especially since Martha has taken over, there's no evidence to support the fact that the ownership is a problem here in Detroit with this team. Would you agree?
I don't agree that ownership is a problem. I've been on other teams. I've been on teams that were good, and I've been on teams that were bad. People thought Stan Kroenke was the issue and with the Rams. What are they doing right now? Right. You know, so owners, I think owners have less of an impact than people think, especially, you know, Bob Kraft is seen as this incredible owner. He's got one of the best coaches and one of the best quarterbacks ever. So, right. You know, I think they're owners don't go play. They don't make a ton of picks. I don't know if they make any picks. So I think the Ford family is plenty capable of producing a winning organization. You know, there's been some tough stretches. I know that. I was there for them, but I think that they've got the pieces in place. You know, I think that they are doing things the right way to build a consistent winner. And again, since, you know, this team's been in the playoffs 3 of the last 6 years. Yeah. You know, that's not atrocious. There's a lot of teams that would go, I'll take that.
Yeah, we'd have taken it 6 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's, you know, sometimes you got to make sure that the glass is getting painted the right way.
Yep. And I'll tell you, there's two things that I think owners affect. The majority of what they affect is, number one is, are they willing to spend money in the coaching staff? Because there's a salary cap for players, right? There's no way that they can cheap out on that, really, without it being obvious and them being called out. So from a player's perspective, I don't see a whole lot of ownership unless they're in the decision-making process, and we don't see that with Bob Quinn there. Rod Wood, the $100 million investment that they've made in Ford Field, the work that they've been doing to really bring the fan experience up. There's been no cheapness, no fear of spending a dollar on that. The coaching staff, I can see if there was ownership that just wouldn't pay money to pull the right guys in, that you weren't getting the coach you wanted because you weren't willing to give them a big enough contract. You don't see any of that out of the Ford sure. family, right?
Sure.
And what you do see is players that care about the ownership. I'll go to the Tampa game. Before the game, Martha was on the sideline from the beginning when the players were on the field, standing there, 93-year-old woman, right? Beautiful 93-year-old woman standing on the sideline, watching the whole warm-up until it was completely done, and then she left. Golden Tate came up, gave the whole Ford family hugs, shake hands, talked to him a little bit, and went back out and did his thing. There's a respect for ownership amongst the players that I think shows that there's not a problem with ownership on this team. And while I get it, you're looking for someone to blame, and people say the only thing that's consistent throughout all these years of loss is the ownership. I just don't think I think it's a false equivalency. It's just a correlation. Not a
well, yeah, and again, everyone needs to understand it's not always a grass is greener thing. Cleveland changed their ownership. How's that working out? So, I think that what you have in an owner is an owner that's been there for a long time, that the community means something to them, that they have no desire to leave the place. They're committed to the area and the team, and they are showing the affinity to spend money and to do things the right way. So what that shows me is they are building a long-term performance goal that is going to be sustainable. And again, you're a team that's been to the playoff 3 of the last 6 years, and we're right in it, in the thick of it with 2 weeks left. So you're not in a terrible place. You're not in the place you want to be, but you're in a place that you go, okay, we've got things going in a positive direction. And then you have to always be mindful of how do we get better? Where does the next step come from?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. All right, let's move on. I'm going to use a couple of calls. We got two calls that are, I think, the calls we want to use this week from listeners. Let's go into one of them right here. We'll start with Lucas's call.
Hey, it's Lucas from Dayton. I just got to catch up on the postgame show. And I really only one thought. It's, and I know Chris was kind of coming around saying maybe we should fire Caldwell now. But I don't think you can make the argument using Stafford's career as a reason to keep Caldwell, because we're never going, and this came up multiple times, but you're never going to get a for sure coach. And if your argument is, oh, hey, Caldwell's at least average, maybe something can happen with him, then you can make that argument to the end of Stafford's career. I don't see any point in time where, next year, is there going to be a coach that we can grab and say, oh, yep, this guy's for sure going to make us better? I don't think we are ever going to have that. And if the argument is, well, Caldwell's at least mediocre, then we're going to be stuck with Caldwell until Stafford's done playing. So just curious what your thoughts were on that. Overall, the game sucked. Sucked watching it. I it wasn't unexpected to me. When I saw that the other teams that we need to lose were losing, I kind of had a feeling, this is going to be it. The Lions are going to lose because everyone else is doing what they need to. So, once again, another mediocre year. I guess at least this year, the Packers can't take it from us because we took it from ourselves. And whoop-de-fucking-do. Love the show. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Lucas. So I'm going to really quick jump into this, and Dan, you can rip me apart wherever you think I'm wrong. My take, and it's evolved a little bit, but where I started after the Cincy game, and we were all kind of in an emotional place at that point. It wasn't that, I didn't say Caldwell was a mediocre coach. He is above mediocre. 3 of the last 6 years, as Dan said, we've made the playoffs. I talked about Jim Schwartz. He was the right coach at the right time for an 0-16 team. He brought a swagger. He brought an attitude. He brought what was needed to turn a team like that out and get out of that rut and start breaking the however many losses on the road, all those bad streaks and all those demons. We had to shed those. Jim Schwartz was the right guy, the fiery guy to get us to do that and exude the confidence and just walk the walk. That team needed that. Then we moved on. from him, because at times, you know, we saw the four set challenge flag throw and you weren't throwing, you know, and then the rule changed. Of course, rules change for the, after the Detroit Lions get hosed by him all the time. But we saw he was a little too fiery. So we swing the pendulum way back, but we do upgrade. We bring in Jim Caldwell, who's more than a mediocre coach. He's above average, right? He's done well with this team. He was the guy that took us then to the next level beyond where Jim Schwartz could take us. And where I'm at now, I'm at like, okay, I'm ready for the coach that can take us to the promised land, can take us to that Super Bowl level team. It takes talent. That's what Bob Quinn's working on, but I'm ready for that next coach. Now, here's what I want to do though. When I select that coach, I want to, you can't pick a sure thing. That's just impossible, but you can minimize risk along the way. And this is my kind of businessman's approach, right? I'm making a decision like this. What am I looking at? Well, I talk about Stafford's career, right? He's hitting 30 years old. He's not going to be around forever. You sign a head coach, they're going to be around at least 3 years. It's going to be at least a 3-year commitment to a head coach before you're going to move on. Now you're putting Stafford up a little higher. You bring in another head coach after that. There's a whole year of learning a system and so on. And you're talking really 4 to 5 years before you start seeing some big kind of change. And you really are then at the kind of hitting the twilight of his career. Hopefully not. But on the average for quarterbacks, that's what you would be looking at. I don't want to waste these years on a bad choice. I look out there. I've now heard that there's up to 14 teams that could be looking for head coaches this year. That's a lot of competition for a field that doesn't look primed with grade A quality folks that are above Jim Caldwell's level. So my whole thing is not that I think we need to keep Caldwell forever, but I think this offseason is going to be a real tough one to find the right kind of coach. I wouldn't want to be in Bob Quinn's shoes, because I think it's the right time to move on from a team perspective, but from a talent availability perspective, I just don't know if this is the right, I think we're out of cycle again on this whole kind of conversation, and it worries me. So Dan, go ahead and rip apart my arguments and tell me what a fool.
No. I mean, you make good points. Here's my thing. So you can never say, oh man, what are the coaching options out there? Because if there were a bunch of good coaching options out there, then there'd be a bunch of idiots who fired them. Or, you know, so there's not going to be, oh man, look at all these coaches. Well, why are they available? So that's a part of it for me. I get how people go, we need to move on from Jim Caldwell. I understand people's feelings, especially coming off this game and going, man, we did the impossible. We lost the game that they could not lose. Like there was, you know, so I understand that. My thing is this, where here's the reality. If there's a coach out there as a general manager that you think is the next star as a coach, whether he's, and that's, we've seen that with the Rams this year, whether he's 29 or 40, it doesn't matter. If there's somebody that you think as a talent evaluator is better than the guy that you have, you always pull the trigger. And that's the reality of it, because if you don't, someone's going to. And we've seen in this league that if you don't have a coach and you don't have a quarterback, you have no shot. And so I will never advocate for anyone getting fired. Coach Caldwell, I love. I've been very open about that. I think he's a fantastic coach. He's an incredible man. But if there's somebody that Bob Quinn has done his evaluation on or has experience with or has done background on, and everyone has told him that guy in 2 years is going to be incredible, then you go get him early. Mm-hmm. Because you're better early than better late. And I guarantee you that's what happened with, I don't want to keep using the Rams, but that's what happened with the Rams. I guarantee is everyone told them, this guy is a star. You might be getting him a year early. And they made the decision, well, we want to be a year early than a year late, because then he's gone. So there's no, again, I'm never going to say fire somebody because I know what it's like to be fired.
Yeah.
But I understand the reality of the NFL. And you heard Coach Caldwell say himself this week, it's a performance-based business, and the performance hasn't been up to the standard, the expectation level. So everyone, they're very aware of it, and obviously with the talk. If you make the choice to move on, you better not have a plan. You better have an answer.
Yeah.
You better know you have the answer, because you don't, as a general manager, you're not getting a bunch of swings. And if you're going to go get somebody, then it better be you. I know, like you said, there's nothing guaranteed, but you better have the answer, and that answer better be better than 2 playoff visits in 3 years. They'd better do something better than that, because that's what Coach Caldwell has done with 2 playoff visits in 4 years. I'm sorry. So you better go do something than that if somebody will go get that job done for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I talk about with the minimization of risk. And it's tough. It's tough to see that. And we talk about,
but you can't go about that thinking. You can't have the mindset of minimization of risk or fear of failure with that, because they'll never go take the next step.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Unless they go with the mindset of, okay, we're not trying to minimize risk, or we're kind of scared. No. You can't, because you'll continue the chances of mediocrity.
Yeah.
My thing is this, like you said, there's 14 teams that are quote unquote being reported of potentially firing coaches. What you see in the NFL is roller coasters, right? There's 6 teams that are usually good, and there's everyone else is kind of roller coastery, where, oh, there's a good year, there's 2 bad years. Oh, there's an okay year, there's 3 bad years. Oh, there's 2, you know? And there's so much turnover in the NFL with coaches and players. I wonder why teams don't sit back and go, why don't we do it differently?
Right.
10 years ago, 12 years ago, everyone wanted Marvin Lewis fired in Cincinnati. Now, I know that Marvin Lewis, he hasn't won a playoff game, but they've been a good football team for a decade now. They've had success for a decade now. They haven't won the big thing, but they've had success for a sustained period of time. And that's because they made the decision, well, this head coach is good, so let's continue to put the good around him.
And try to give him the tools he needs to get to that next level.
It's an organization, right? It's not a person. It's not a team. It's not a head coach. It's an organization.
Yep. And it brings up, you made a great point about these are people that you're talking about. And at the end of the day, yeah, it's your coach and it's your team. You want to win, but calling for people to be fired and that, it's kind of dodgy. It's because you're dealing with people. We talk about it around cut day. You know, when we interviewed Casey Redfern, he was kind of coming in, he was on the bubble, and then he got hurt. That was a heartbreaker to see him, because he was a good punter who is going to play in the NFL one day. BJ Mitchell, a running back who tried out with the Lions, he's a guy that's like on the cusp of an NFL career but can't quite crack it. Another really, really great guy who can't do it. But you talk about that. These are people that are going through these situations. So, I mean, look, it's okay as a fan to say, look, I want a new coach, but you have to have a little bit of – you know, a little bit of humanity about you when you do that. The other part, I think, you know, when I talk about Matthew Stafford's career, Dan brought it up, he's one of 10 people in the world that can do that like that. What do you think the odds are of, and we'll take the Packers out of the conversation, what are the odds of getting another Hall of Fame quarterback but after Matthew Stafford, right? That's why my perception right now with this team is we've got one of the key pieces in our quarterback that we need to capitalize on, and we need to make the right decision at coaching, at head coach here. And that's just kind of why I use Stafford's career, because I just don't think we're going to upgrade when he decides to retire. I just don't see it happening.
Sure. I mean, unlikely, because again, the guys like that, they're not coming around often. And you want to have the pieces around. Again, I said there's 3 variables that make good organizations: a good GM, a good head coach, and a great quarterback. And if you have the great quarterback, he becomes the most important person. So I think it's you continue to build around those people. I think the Lions have that. I understand where people go, man, Caldwell stinks, or those are extremes. There's no evidence to prove that to me. But I understand when there is a plausible proof for fans to go, Caldwell should be gone. And I understand that. And that's even hard for me to say. I can understand that. And I promise you, Jim Caldwell understands that because he understands the business of it. He understands it's a performance-based business. But like you said, I use an example like this where if you're a quarterback and your team goes and hires a defensively based head coach, the feeling in your stomach is like a gut-wrenching because you know, well, this guy's going to make me protect the ball, throw a bunch of checkdowns, and hopefully we win 13-10 every week, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just you want to have someone there that makes the most important person in your organization, your quarterback, play its highest level.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we got another call we're going to take here. This is a good one. It ends with a good punch. Let's listen in.
Hey, guys. I figured as long as I've been listening to you on your podcast, I figured I'd give you a call. So this has been the first time that I have been this disappointed in this team, and I don't know how long. Usually it's the refs or it's some other like call or penalty destroying the Lions. But this time it was the Lions themselves that did it. And I think you guys always ask the question when we say we want to fire Caldwell and who we want to replace him with. And I think I want to replace him with Boogie Down Brown.
Okay, fine. boy, quick shout out to Keegan Michael Key for his great Boogie Down Brown thing that he did with the Lions players. And that's the question I ask. And people get really mad at me. A lot of angry people around Christmas. And I wound up taking Christmas off and spending it with my family rather than tweeting and Redditing back and forth about this. But I'm like, okay, fine. You want to fire Jim Caldwell. I get it. You go ahead. Call for his head. But like you said earlier, I say, who? Who are you going to replace him with? Well, that's Bob Quinn's job. Well, no. You can't just stand there and pound the table and say, I need him fired and I want someone else, because all you're doing is setting it up so you can complain again who the next guy is. Make a stand. Say who you want. Even if they don't pick him, at least you've thought through and said you've got a plan. You've got an answer, right, to the question. Just saying fire him, it's an absolutely emotional place to come from.
Yeah.
And I get it, but it's just.
And you've gone through that, right? I mean, as a Lions fan, you've done that. You've done the whole 3 years fire, 4 years fire. You've done that. We've done that, right? So, and that's my point with the roller coaster of the NFL. We just keep doing this stuff. We just keep doing this stuff. And there's the definition of insanity, right? He's doing the same thing, expecting different results. Right. Well, you know, like eventually if you find a head coach that you think is good to being really good and has proven to be good, then just because in that moment it's not what you want, you don't give up what you really want for what you want right now. And so that's the thing for me is we've done the whole routine of fire coach, bring some this guy in. Oh, yay, everyone's super excited. Well, we got to fire him we've done that routine. So if you've got a good head coach, keep them and continue to grow around them.
Yep. All right. So let's take that concept. And because right now the Twitterverse, the Redditverse, the universe seems lined up and pretty certain that Jim Caldwell isn't going to survive into next season. All right. So let's just say we'll accept that point. We'll say that that's the case because it's going to be hard to survive this kind of a PR storm anyway. Let's just say that that's the case. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about it. Who, you know, it comes up with the question, who's your dream coaching candidate? That's from Lane Brain. A couple other that are related. Terry Foster in the Free Press, I believe. Detroit Lions to make serious play for Super Bowl champion head coach, which is John Gruden. That's from Chef Curry Sauce. And then Bruce Arians is leaving the Cardinals. Should he become a head coaching candidate for the Lions? And that's from Save the Dirt True. Now, Dan, I'm going to put my thinking out there because I love to get torn apart by people who know much, much more than I do. So I'll start there with my dream coaching piece. And I have to give a little shout out to Risden because we've talked about this. Jeff Risden, he's a longtime guest in the show. He and I talk about this, and we came to the conclusion, like, if you get a young head coach, you want experienced coordinators. And maybe vice versa. If you have a very experienced coach, you can bring in some younger head, you know, coordinators that could do more. Kind of like, you know, Caldwell and Jim Bob Cooter is a good example of how you have kind of more experience as a head coach with a younger coordinator. Now, my thinking is, and this is just where I am today, it could change next week, right? And I openly admit that. But I really like what I'm seeing from Mike Vrabel. I think this guy has a really, really good football mind, and kind of that youth and creativity that comes with his ability and where he's at. I really like him as a candidate for head coach. I know he's been very short-lived as defensive coordinator in Houston, but I say, okay, let's kind of pull him in as a head coach. And then when we think about it, I kind of like a Bruce Arians offensive coordinator, kind of the back and forth between them. So first, tell me what an idiot I am, and then go ahead and take it and talk about what do you think? Who's your dream coaching candidates? And
nah, well, I don't think you're an idiot. I mean, the John Gruden thing is not happening. I mean, no. He's Gruden. He's making $7 million a year in television, so it's just unlikely. The Vrabel thing obviously is interesting to me because he's got really good, probably perspective. He's intelligent. He was a really good player, kind of a do-it-all kind of guy. Bob Quinn obviously knows him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you could get somebody like a Bruce, does Bruce Arians want to go be a coordinator somewhere? You know, do they have the offensive line to go run Bruce Arians' offense, which is a hold it and push the ball downfield? They've got the guy with the arm. Yes. So, I mean, I always get concerned with like defensive minded head coaches, especially in the NFL right now, because it's a score points league right now. And right. So that is not concerning to me, but I always get hesitant. And also, Vrabel's been the D coordinator 1 year and Houston's defense regressed. Now they had injuries. Yes. But as we talked about previous, those are part of the league. Those are, you know, so I don't see him as the standout guy now again.
Well, and I'll argue with that because JJ Watt, And who's the
line? Whitney Merciless.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those kind of injuries, that's like, I mean,
impactful.
Absolutely. And like,
no doubt.
If the Lions had lost like a Stafford, that's kind of how I kind of look at that, the way that team stacked up. Mm-hmm. If we were to lose him, I would absolutely expect this team to regress. And I think that what they saw in injuries, I don't think that, I mean, again, well, it's part of the league. You talk about depth, right? And I kind of throw that at the feet of the GM. But you're losing in those kind of guys, very, very key players that the team kind of revolves around.
And that goes back to my point where if there is a guy that you think, if Vrabel is a guy that you think, man, this dude's going to be a star, then you go get him. Because if eventually you got to pull the trigger one way or the other. It's either you keep or you go get. And if you don't want to be late to the party, because if you're late to the party, you're late to the party.
You're the designated driver at that point.
Yeah, you know, it's just you're watching other teams be successful. I know there's, man, Josh McDaniels. I'm intrigued by Josh McDaniels because there's very, very rarely in the NFL do guys go get their first head coaching job and be successful with it.
Right.
More often than not, it's a second job that guys are lucky enough to get. And I think he is a guy that potentially would have learned so much from his experience in Denver in a good way. And obviously his ability to offensive mind and be creative on offense and the pedigree of where he comes from would speak highly of him. He's got, you know, he's probably more knowledgeable personnel-wise than a bunch of head coaches because of experience in New England.
Oh, and that's one of the things why I kind of – he was on my list early, and I took him off because I've heard that he wants player control. Now, maybe with Bob Quinn there and their familiarity, he can kind of assuage any fears or, you know, can kind of come to an agreement with McDaniels. But that's the thing that kind of put me off. There's a certain amount, and you got to have some arrogance. I get that, right? Is even as a player, but as a coach, you just have to be cocksure of yourself. I just feel like maybe he's a little bit more, it leans a little more towards the Schwartz version of that than the Caldwell version. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the name that, like, if I had to pick one name that I would go get if I was a guy, or I would certainly spend a lot of time, you know, looking at and recruiting and whatnot, I would very much so, a guy that I had the chance to play for, you know, as a quarterback coach, Frank Reich intrigues me. Interesting. And Frank, well, obviously he's had an impact with Carson. He's had a very positive impact with Wentz. He's been a coordinator. He's been a quarterback coach. He played in the NFL for a long time. He has been a part of really successful offenses that ran different offenses. He's been a part of different schemes. And I think there's something to be said for the offensive minded guys that are creative. I mean, if you go watch Philadelphia's offense this year, there's a lot of creativity to it. There's a lot of moving parts to it that you see in a New Englandy or you see in the Rams, these innovative calls. So I know him a little bit. I think very highly of him. I think that if I was a GM saying, hey, I'm looking for a coach, this could be a guy. I'll throw a name out there that's probably going to be like a head scratcher, but Matt LaFleur.
I've heard some people talk about him.
Well, he's very young. He's probably not ready to be a head coach right now. He's got a really good football understanding. My thing that would I be concerned about is I don't know if he's ever called plays at the NFL level, so that would be concerning to me. But he's got a lot of the attributes of can you lead a football team? Are you innovative offensively? Can you put people in successful positions to be successful? And again, the asterisk would be, well, who does he get as his defensive coordinator? Can he get, can he get a guy that's up and coming? Can he get a Vrabel to leave and go to Detroit as a coordinator? Can he get, the guy from Cincinnati, I don't know, George Edwards from Minnesota that maybe wants to call his own stuff because Zimmer's in Minnesota. Who does he get as a defensive coordinator? That'd be a big deal to me. Those are two kind of off the cuff names that might be intriguing. But like you said, if you got to go get somebody, who is it?
And this is going to be probably an unpopular opinion, but I would love Jim Schwartz back as a defensive coordinator. I think that guy is great in that role.
I don't see him leaving Philly though. No. I don't see him.
Got a little dream going on, right?
Sure.
Hey, hold on. This doesn't happen that often. We got a call coming in on the hotline. Let me grab that real quick, Dan. Detroit Lions podcast hotline.
Hey, it's your favorite Lions fan, Dean Blandino.
Dean, how you doing, man? Why are you calling us?
I'm good. I'm calling because, I know I was thinking about Orlovsky's play when he ran out of the end zone, and I'm not sure that many people realize, but I did a little reconnaissance, and that end zone was only lined for 9 yards. So actually he was still in bounds when he ran toward the back of the end zone. That was not a 10-yard end zone. It was a 9-yard end zone. And it inspired me that if that could happen and that poor guy could be vilified for that play wrongly, might I add, then that inspired me to go into officiating and make sure that never happens to an unsuspecting quarterback ever again.
Wow, Dean, that's pretty nice of you to call. I mean, and just for that, Dan, I didn't realize that. Did you see that?
I mean, I figured that was the case because I would never have done something so stupid, but I could have used this information, 9 years and 4,378 death threats later.
I knew your field awareness was better than that. And yeah, either he thinks he's in the CFL or it's a 9-yard end zone. And I knew it was one of those two, and it was the 9-yard end zone.
And then out of that, we've been able to inspire head of officiating and now the biggest. I saw you last time I was in LA with your big Lions foam finger. I mean, the number one Lions fan. Will we see face paint this year? Is that going to come out at the stadium?
It's possible. It's really possible. I'm waiting for a playoff run to get the face paint out. So I don't know. I don't know when that's going to happen. But I'm really hoping and praying that I can get the silver and blue face paint out pretty soon.
That's fantastic.
I tell you, after our interview, a lot of Lions fan noticed the blue tie when you were there on Fox doing the.
That's right.
Play calls. Yep. Yeah, you've got a lot of new fans, a lot of friends here in Detroit. You can come by and have a Verner's anytime, buddy.
I know. I still get the Verner's comments. I still get all the Detroit love. Some people are just beyond repair. unfortunately.
That's okay. That's okay.
But I know the feeling. But a lot of other people have come. Yeah, right? I know. But a lot of others have come on board. And hopefully with this new information, I think we'll Dan will be, maybe he'll be off the hook.
Yeah, it changed the NFL landscape. Now there's no winless season since those toe points are, you know, erased from the scoreboard, and I can my ego is no longer a zero.
And if you could talk to your friends in the officiating, if we could just go ahead and start reviewing field conditions as a replay, that might help prevent this kind of issue in the future as well, because it's a common problem, right?
It is a common problem. I always go back to in Hoosiers when Gene Hackman, when he measures, you know, he's showing the team. I think we need to do that before every game, make sure we got 10-yard end zones, 100-yard fields, because, again, we don't want that to happen to another quarterback. And
the long-term effects, however,
4,000 effects, days or whatever it's been.
Yeah, long-term effects are unfixable.
That's right. And I just wonder, there's some kind of, I don't know what kind of voodoo magic there is, but it always seems like the field is longer for the Lions and shorter for their opponents. So if we could look into that too, Dean, I'd really appreciate that, please.
Yeah, we'll definitely look into that. I think the uprights get a little smaller when the Lions are kicking. They get wider when the other team's kicking. I noticed that. I don't know what it is, but okay. I think there's something to it.
Well, thank you for taking notice. Dean, thanks for the call, man. We really appreciate you jumping in and clarifying this for Dan. Hopefully, you know, we can make things better for him going forward.
And I'm always listening, and for some reason, whenever I call, they never let me on. I don't know why, but I'm always listening to the podcast. So
use the hotline, bud. We'll get you on.
You know, they're in complete control of that, Dean. So
exactly, I know. I know.
All right, Dean. Thanks for calling, man. Have a great day.
You got it, guys.
All right. Well, big thanks to Dean. That was nice of him to call. I would be remiss if I didn't remind you guys to head to DetroitLionsPodcast.com anytime as you need to do your shopping. You know. You go to Amazon, you hit our shop link on the main menu there, and there's also a little picture that you can click on. It takes you straight to Amazon, no pop-ups, no funny stuff, but it's the best place to go to get your stuff, anything you really want. And by doing it via the DetroitLionsPodcast.com website, we get a little kickback based on your thing. They say, hey, those guys from the Detroit Lions podcast sent us, and they're kind of cool over there, so let's give them free money. So it's a great way to help the show, great way to do stuff to help the show, fund the show, the bandwidth that you guys keep using, and you do it by doing something you're going to do anyway. There's nothing better. It's what Dan does. It's the only way he goes to Amazon. Right, Dan?
Absolutely. Yeah. Done deal. Christmas was done.
Yeah. He's getting a new house next week on Amazon. It's great. All right. Let's move on. Now, this is a big one, and I'm really interested in your perspective, not just on the effect, but on the thinking behind this. Teams are complaining to the NFL that the Packers have violated the injured reserve rule, the IR rule, and they think that Aaron Rodgers should now have to be released. That's from Funny Penguin. I think that was a Rappaport tweet. What's going on here? Is this a real possibility? I don't feel like the NFL would let it happen, but I sure want them. If it's the rules, it's got to happen, right?
0% chance. No, it's not. I mean,
oh, dash all hope.
No, teams do it all the time. No, it's not going to happen. Fine. That's a quick dream.
Okay. It was a dry one at that, but okay. All right, we'll move on. A lot of Stafford talk today, but this is a big one. Matthew Stafford is on pace to be sacked more than at any time in his career. And here is a crazy bonus stat. He's avoided 20 sacks by breaking tackles in the backfield more than any quarterback this season. That's from Scenes from My Memories. This is nuts, the abuse that he's taken this year. And when you see a stat like this, it really, I mean, your eyes bulge. First off, maybe Dan, take us through a sack. Take us through how your body is racked and like what's going through your head. What's going on in the next play? Let's kind of take it from a quarterback's perspective, and then we'll talk about how, you know, this might be affecting Stafford and what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, sacks physically, especially if they're from a defensive lineman, physically don't hurt you too much because there's not the explosive aspect. Usually it's you're getting wrapped up here or there. As long as you're not getting twisted in a super crazy way, they don't physically do something to you, but mentally they can wear you down because when the Lions offensively aren't a quick strike offense. You know, they don't have the big ball threat. So when you know you have to be a methodical offense, sacks kind of wear on you mentally as a quarterback, because you never want to get, you know, what everyone says is behind the chains. You don't want to get into second and long and third and long. So that's mentally, I think they do more to quarterbacks, especially how they're protected nowadays, than physically. Now, if it's a linebacker, an unblocked guy coming off an edge or shooting a gap and there's no hand on him and he hits you with a sack, those are physically will rattle you for sure, because those guys are so stout and compact and explosive that, you know, you feel those are the ones you feel on Wednesday still. Yeah, that's an incredibly surprising stat to me, because their offense isn't built to hold the ball, to push it downfield, which would generate the opportunity for more sacks. It's such an get the ball out of your hands offense. So that's surprising to me that the number's that high. It's a testament to how well he's played given the circumstances. And it's kind of another, you know, asterisk or variable on the, you know, where the offensive line up front situation may be. But, you know, it's again, sacks, you know, pass protection takes everybody, and offensive line gets blamed for it. But, you know, it takes the five guys up front. It takes Matthew getting the ball out of his hands. It takes Jim Bob calling plays that are going to do that. It takes the backs picking up pressure. It takes the receivers winning on their routes in a timely fashion. So if you think about it, if the defense brings five guys, they're going to play man-to-man behind it. And if Marvin's or Golden, whatever, TJ, whoever's route, Eric's route is supposed to get to 12 yards, and it's going to take them 2.6 seconds to get to that 12 yards. Well, if they're getting pressed, it's going to take longer than 2.6, you know, like 2.6 seconds to get to that depth. And if Matthew, if someone's holding their block and at 2.7 seconds, someone slips off, a defensive lineman slips off and breaks free towards Matthew, and Matthew has to hold the ball till 2.8 seconds because of the press coverage and the receivers trying to get their depth, well, then that's how we have sacks, where if the receiver got open a tenth of a second faster, the ball is out. So, you know, it takes everybody. I know that's a lot of detail for people, but it takes everybody in the pass game to avoid sacks. I mean, that interception last week, and I love the guy. I mean, I adore him, but that interception last week, the receiver's open, the line blocks well, Matthew does the correct footwork, he plants off one hitch, and he goes to launch the ball to Golden, who's going to be a big touchdown or not. You know, if worst case scenario, tackled inside the 10, Theo gets beat on his block, Matthew gets hit, ball goes up in the air, pick. Now that quote-unquote sack of the quarterback's not in the O-line. So it takes everybody. That's a crazy stat, though.
Yeah, it's insane. And then the 20 broken tackles, right? Here you got a guy. He might have broken more tackles than Theo this year. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, that's a big number. I mean, yeah. It's a big number. It's probably because he's been finally learned how to squat after my 3 years with him.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question before we move on. This is something that I've talked about. And this is, I again, Matthew, I absolutely adore Matthew Stafford as well. And I've grown to appreciate what he brings to the team so much more over time. But one of the things that the Lions have been plagued with over a long period of time is dropped passes. Right. And it doesn't matter if it's Chris Durham. Did you know he was roommates with Matthew Stafford? No.
Anyway, yeah.
So there, you mean from Chris Durham all the way through, you know, Kelvin had a lot of drops, a higher amount of drops for a wide receiver, even especially one as great as him. Golden Tate has dropped more with Matthew at times in his career. There's a lot of drops on the Lions team, and the one kind of common denominator was Matthew. Is there something about the way he throws the ball? I know when we were at training camp this year, you could hear, I mean, he'd throw that ball, it would whistle. I mean, it would whistle through the air. And him and Matt Kaya or Brad Kaya were working out side by side, right? And Matthew would throw the ball, and it was just like a bullet train, just wham, right? And again, you'd hear the ball whistle, and you'd see this high arc on Kaya's ball. And it took twice as long to get there, kind of a thing, right? Is there something about the way Matthew, is it like nose down or something that's giving receivers problems? And again, I'm not trying to rip on Stafford by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just trying to see, is the common denominator something about the way he throws the ball?
No, I just think catch the football. I just, you're never going to blame a quarterback for having too good of an arm. So that he spins it and the throws it as well as anybody ever. So just catch the football. Those guys got to do their job.
Yep. I've seen some messed up wide receiver fingers, though, I got to say.
Sure, sure.
All right, no, and I don't disagree. I'm just wondering if it's something the receivers aren't used to or something, but okay. So we'll move on. There's one thing, you know, we talk about sacks on Matthew Stafford. We did a big contest, hashtag Stafford so tough, and we made it out there. People could win a Fanatics Lions hat, and don't forget, if you get all your Lions gear, the toasters are sold out, guys. So keep your bathtubs empty after that Cincinnati game. There's no hope on that one. But it looks like there was a run on them. But all the rest of your Lions gear or Red Wings or it doesn't matter if you're a Dodgers fan. All the stuff is there. Head to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Hit that shop link or hit that Fanatics link on the sidebar. Take you right there. Same thing. They give us a kickback for all you buy. And it's because we're so great, because they love us, you know? So go ahead and do it that way. But let's talk about the contest. Hashtag Stafford's so tough. Man, so many entries to this contest. There's a lot of people. One of the funnier ones, though, if you saw the last episode of Ask a Lion on the Lions website with Tori Petri, they had Matthew Stafford on, and Dan asked a question that got broadcast. It was pretty funny. And it's funny because Dan has been really active lately. He kept wanting to enter the Stafford So Tough contest, and I told him, you can't. I'm sorry. It's not fair to everybody else, Dan. You know too much. It's just not going to work out. So we talked through this, and we've got the top six tweets for Stafford So Tough. And I'm going to go through them really quick, Dan, and I want you to kind of pick which one you think should be the winner. So the winner not only wins a great Lions hat, but they know they're picked by Lions great Dan Orlovsky. Does that sound good to you?
I'm in.
All right.
I am in.
All right. So first one, Terrell Suggs added to the Ravens injury report with a foot injury after stepping on Stafford's hand. Hashtag Stafford So Tough from Brett.
I like that one.
Yeah, yeah. We got Stafford So Tough. Ford Field has Stafford toe. Stafford So Tough. That's pretty good instead of turf toe.
All right. All right.
Hey, Detroit Lions podcast. Did you hear that Stafford's so tough? He converted Dean Blandino into a Lions fan by throwing Verners all the way to L.A. when he heard Dean call it Vernon's. It's from Jim Young. And that's kind of good, especially because
Dean called. I like that.
All right. Stafford is able to throw Aaron Rodgers further than Aaron Rodgers is able to throw a football. That's a good Stafford's so tough. Stafford's so tough, he once threw a grenade and it killed 50 people and then it exploded. Okay. And then Stafford's so tough, instead of watching Remember the Titans, he makes the Titans remember him. A good reference to the Parrish Cox trucking at the shoulder of Matthew Stafford. So a couple of good ones, right? There's some good ones.
Yeah, there's some creativity.
What do you think, Dan? Which one? Who's our big winner for this Lions hat?
There's one winner, right?
Yep, one winner.
Oof. I've had enough bad things said about me. I don't want to make too many people mad. I think that I like to go with the Terrell Suggs added to the Ravens injury report.
There you go. He got his foot injury after stepping on Stafford's hand. Brett Cousineau, thank you so much. We will contact you via Twitter, and we'll get you hooked up with your prize. Congratulations, and thank you, everybody, for playing Stafford So Tough.
Well done.
I think this might be a yearly thing because Matthew is always tough, tough as nails. All right, we'll move on. Next topic, Glover Quinn. He doesn't feel like the safeties in the Pro Bowl had a better year than he did. That's from Demo Ramen. I would have to argue that it's true. And that the Pro Bowl, I don't like it because I know I get it's a popularity contest. That doesn't bother me. But when you have teams in large markets or in Green Bay's case with a massive fan base, it weighs the voting in such an odd way that maybe it isn't a Pro Bowl. It's just something different. I really think Quinn should have made it this year. Again, he's been spectacular back there.
Yeah, but GQ should know that the Pro Bowl is very much so just a popularity contest and who can get the most votes off these people. And I mean, I don't know necessarily who. I would imagine Landon Collins, Thomas and Jenkins would be the guys that are going safeties. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he's probably right, but he should know that's just, I mean, the Giants are in a huge market. Philadelphia is a huge market. And Earl Thomas is the best safety in football, one of, not that GQ isn't. So yeah, he probably deserves to be in there, but the Pro Bowl is a jaded voting process.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's just the reality of it. It's a jaded process where if you get a bunch of fans to vote, you're in.
Yep, absolutely. So there you go. We never put a whole lot of weight in the Pro Bowl, but just had to bring it up. It was a good one. Glover Quinn is a great safety. I think that's the whole message there. We'll move on. This is a big one. Dan, this might hit a little close to home, so brace yourself. This one's urgent. The Detroit Lions' legendary safety streak is in danger. That's from Sir Bananas. We've gone 13 years in a row by having a safety in a game in a season. Now, this is either against us or for us in our favor, but 13 years in a row, at least one game with a safety, and the streak is in danger. Dan, is there any particular insight you can give us here as to what this means for the team and its success going forward?
Well, I'm not playing for Green Bay this week, so that's 50% less chance at happening. I don't know if the team's even aware of it. Hopefully, you know, I know that there's been a safety or two against Green Bay in favor of the Lions in the past years, and hopefully that there's something that could come this week for them in a good shape.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll go there. All right. This time we got to step into fantasy football. This is it. The season's over. Dan, it was robbed for me. I was ahead at the end of the season by two games in the Champions League and had the first round bye, and I just got destroyed. Players didn't show up. And you know how important it is to these NFL players that they show up for their fantasy owners. And
rightfully so.
So let's win. Let's talk about the folks that are in the money. Four leagues this year. The Champions League, Calvin's Johnson wins, takes home the big bucks. Congratulations. Ruck Fodgers takes home the second place money. And my nemesis, the guy who beat me in the playoffs but changed his names to worst loss ever, and this worst loss Avengers, when I beat him the two times, he takes third. In the IDP Intermediate League, we got the Upper Deckers in first. Congratulations. Cooterific second. And then In Y'all Ass, third place. Good one. Love the names. Non-IDP Intermediate League, Kenny G, Smooth Glass, takes home the gold. Shake It, Goff, gets the silver. And Hoofhearted is in third place. Lastly, in the beginner league, TJ's Wang takes home the gold. Congratulations, everybody. Thank you so much for playing. We appreciate it. And for all you guys, we'll see you next year. And again, thanks. It's a great way, fundraiser for the podcast and a good way to win some money when you're someone like
the Calvin. The names that people come up with are incredible, man. Yeah. Golly.
I will share my name, Dan, and maybe I shouldn't, but I was the Harry Cooter Rooters.
I mean, the creativity itself should warrant some kind of bonus points or something.
Ooh, you know what? Maybe we will have we did in year one have a creative name contest. Maybe we should.
Yeah, best name for sure. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of creativity getting displayed.
All right. So for you winners, contact Nate. He's our managing editor at DetroitLionsPodcast.com. He's either via Twitter at Nate Cheat, NateChet, or Nathan at DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Let him know. Confirm your email addresses. And that way we can make sure that we get you your money, because that's why you played, right? Unless you just want to make a donation, that's fine too. So that's it. Big Fantasy Football League comes to an end. Congratulations to our winners. I imagine that they should take that money, head over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, click on the SeatGeek link, and buy tickets to their next concert or show or sporting event, wherever they want to go. SeatGeek is the greatest place. You get to pick your seat so no one picks it for you. And do that, DetroitLionsPodcast.com. All right, now we're going to try on something new. It's something kind of familiar to our listeners, but this is new for Dan. This is Dan's chance to take us
around the division.
Don't fuck around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you feel that? You feel that bass, Dan?
That's incredible. I just woke up my daughter from a nap.
You didn't have a seizure, did you?
No, I'm all right.
All right, good. All right, Dan's going to take us around the division, and he's going to start the basement bottom Bears. All right, Dan, take it away, man.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are an interesting place, too, because they're probably moving on from their coach, and you've got all these picks that you just invested in your quarterback Trubisky, so you better go get an offensive minded guy. They've got some defensive pieces in place with Floyd and Trevathan back in. Are they going to keep Kyle Fuller. So they're in a place where they've got to go get an offensive-minded coach to have some people around or have a mind around Trubisky. They had me playing receiver this year for them, so they got to go get some receivers, you know, to give him some talent around to throw the ball to. So are they going to, what are they going to do with Kevin White and whatnot? They'll be interesting because, you know, you might, that might be a team that you're battling a head coach for. You don't know if you decide to move on and you both want the offensive head coach.
Yeah.
You know, they've got the young general manager. Bob's a little bit of a young general manager. Ryan Pace is young for Chicago. So are they going to have the same thought process head coaching wise? So they're going to be in a huge rebuilding mode and turmoil and whatnot. But I think they're in a good place at the quarterback position with Trubisky. If, and this is as big of an if as there is if they get a good mind around him and then good players around him, because they've got a line and a back for him.
That's what I was going to ask. And look, I'm the rivals over there in Chicago. I love turmoil over there, but I look at Biscuit and like this year, he wasn't able to throw to the left. He just had a hard time with it. If I were to judge based on this year alone on what we have in Mitchell Trubisky, I'm not fearful, right? But by the same token, and I love this one. This is the same as Chris Derwin was Matthew Stafford's roommate. Darius Slay was benched in his first year with the Lions. So I kind of look and say, Mitchell Trubisky, and I want to kind of your take. What's this guy's
top
end?
See, I like his game.
Yeah. Is this guy going to be a problem for us going forward?
Yes. If he gets a good mind around him and people to throw the football to, because he checks a lot of the boxes. Can he throw it? Yep. Is he smart? Yep. Can he escape? Yep. Is he tough? Yes. Does he work hard? Yes. So again, those boxes check a lot of the stuff. Can he make a lot of the throws? Yep. So, you know, I think it's just going to be dependent on who they put around him for coaches and players, you know, so that'd be the big thing. He's got there's the chance there for him to be a problem. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's move up a notch, still below the Lions, move on to Green Bay. We're going to see them this week, huh?
As a Lions fan, you get sick to your stomach because Green Bay wasted a year, right? I mean, this is, if you get 15 years out of Rodgers, you know, the first two or three are on the pine, you know, learning, and the next 12 are lighting the world on fire. Well, if you get one without them, you want to capitalize. And so that's a bummer. But, you know, they've got more issues than they probably like to lead. There are people to believe they're getting older at the receiver position. Randall Cobb's getting older and less productive. Jordy said he's going to play one more year and be done. They've got to figure out the tight end position. They've been beat up on the offensive line. Bulaga has had a lot of injuries the past couple of years. So, you know, what are they going to do there? And then they've got some defensive pieces that they've got to figure out, you know, with, again, their front. They did a good job, you know, drafting the couple of years with the front, but is the front going to become what it was, you know, in the, you know, early, you know, 2012 to 15, 16 years. So they've got some problems. And the reality is you've got to start thinking about Rodgers and some of the injuries he's had to deal with over the past couple of years. People say they want to play, you know, and do what Tom Brady's done, but Tom Brady didn't deal with the injuries that some of the quarterbacks are dealing with too. So you've got to start thinking, you know, of the future at that position.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the future is soon for that position in Green Bay, because that number 12 has been what team ever goes from Hall of Fame quarterback to Hall of Fame quarterback? That's the biggest lament and the biggest, you know, that's the thing that makes me the angriest about the NFL and the Lions right now is facing those two guys back to back. Boy. All right, let's move up to the unfortunate leaders of the division, those boatmen, the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. I mean, they, you know, we said it a couple of years ago when they got Barr, and we said, well, that guy's a problem for a decade. And so they've got so many good pieces on their defense locked up long term that the defense is not going anywhere, especially the core pivotal parts of it. They're just going to get better and better. Zimmer is such a good defensive mind. You know, they've kind of struck lightning in a bottle offensively.
Yeah, but And you never expected what I saw out of this team this year.
Well, I liked Case Keenum. I liked his game. He was smart. He can throw the ball. He's got some stuff to him. He's not scared. So I liked his game. I didn't expect him to, you know, be, in a dark horse MVP type stuff. But, they've got some pieces. You know, they're doing this without Dalvin Cook. They've got Thielen and Diggs at the outside. They've got Rudolph, so they again have some pieces. They've signed Riley Reiff long term, so they've got some issues up, some good issues in a good way. They've got some pieces up front. Elfine at center is a really, really, really good player. So, you know, if I don't know what their plan is at quarterback, is it going to be Teddy or is it going to be Case? I don't think it'll be Sam Bradford, but is it going to be Bridgewater or Case? You know, if they continue to get production at the quarterback level like they did this year, they are the team to go and hunt because of the talent that they've accrued.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate because we got to see him twice a year. And, as we see, hopefully the decline of the Packers, the ascendance of the Vikings just gives us someone else to dislike. And that's it. Yeah. All right. So that's going to do it for this week. Dan, thanks so much for joining us, man. It was great to have you on the show. You did an awesome job. You've definitely got a future here. Hopefully we'll be in touch. We'll be able to do some more of this in the future.
No, thank you for having me on. It was a blast, man. Absolute blast. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Remember, you guys, this show needs your involvement. Use the comments in the subreddit. Give us your feedback. There's a reason we're the number one podcast. It's because you tell your friends and you share it with your friends and you let us know what works and what doesn't so that we can make sure that this stays your show. Don't forget, give us that feedback. We love it. Also, on Patreon, we're out there. We're loving those folks that support us. Join them. Get that additional content in your pocket. For as little as $1 a month of a donation, you can get access to that as well. Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, or just go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Patreon link. Also on Facebook, Facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, Facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and make sure to follow us on the Tweeter Maker, the Tweeter Machine, @DETLionsPodcast, @DETLionsPodcast. It is the very best place to see Dan.
With no pants on. Oh,
the only way to podcast. Make sure to give us a call via Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast. One word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us on the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS, 929-335-4667. Leave us a message. We'll get you on the show for the fan sanity part. And also, go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Subscribe to the podcast. That way we can come in your little box automatically. Who wouldn't want that? Thank you for tuning in. And we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.
Lions!
Final seconds winding down, and look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.